The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
At the end of the world, this is Michael C. Rupert. It is Sunday, June the 5th, 2011. I'm here in Sebastopol, California, with another episode of the Lifeboat Hour. We're going to be talking about a lot of things that are becoming clear and converging all at once here. It's been kind of an interesting week for me in that perspective as I make my rounds of networking through all of the people we know at CollapseNet. Around the world, I've picked up a real change in general attitude and tone among the people who are aware of Collapse and following it. We had a management meeting this week at CollapseNet, and I was surprised, but everybody was on the same page that this would be a great weekend just to take some time, go have some fun, do something really good with family, friends, people you care about, because all of us are kind of feeling that we don't know when we might have the chance again. That seems to be where we're coming to right now. There's just a number of hugely converging crises that look to be reaching their nub in June and July, and I'm still as firmly convinced that by the end of July, around latest, but through July, in July, we're going to see pretty much everything turning inside out, and that's coming from a number of fronts now. It's not just energy fronts, it's weather. We're having some, really, really catastrophic weather, even for people who are kind of used to weather anomalies. We have the worst drought in 150 years in China, which is dramatically affecting Chinese food production, but also they... water, is what you use to make steam to generate electricity, and China does, heats it with either coal or nuclear, and in a lot of cases diesel, which is a whole separate issue because they're running short of diesel fuel. But China's having not only this huge drought, which is threatening the ability of some people to drink, even and causing some dislocation, but they're having huge power outages. To the point of rationing for factories that that they're still claiming are going to show all this growth this year, but they can't if they don't have electricity. We're going to talk about all of those things coming together, but I have noticed some changes. There are a lot of stories this week that I'm going to cover. If you want to call in tonight, and if you got a question, I think a theme that I would like for us to pursue tonight is to start asking ourselves some harder hypothetical questions about how we're going to deal with human crises. As we see them around us, and how we're going to respond. Let me just plant this. There was a case in San Francisco Bay this week where a suicidal man jumped into the bay, and San Francisco Fire was there, but there, because of budget cutbacks, changes in their liability and workman's comp insurance policies, the fireman couldn't go into the water to save the drowning guy, and he drowned. And I'm not convinced that that's a simply outrageous thing, because we are all going to be forced to rethink, governments and people alike, about what our safety nets are and what is acceptable and what is not, and when you have to take action, even when there's resources and there's a marginal question of return on what you get for the energy again invested in what's going on. These priorities are being rethought out, and I want to talk about some of those things. There's a bunch of stories tonight. By the way, if you want to call in with any questions, I'm going to run through a bunch of stories, and I know that as it usually works for you guys, that's going to trigger a lot of questions anyway. If you want to call in to ask a question tonight, the number is 1-888-874-4888, or you can email me directly, and I've already got a couple questions into lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. I'll open those emails and read your questions on the air. So what I put at the top of stories as I went through the news every day this week was a story quoting a Rothschild. And, you know, we all, in the old days at FTW and everywhere, we would talk about financial elites. And they aren't all Rothschilds or Rockefellers that easy, but you know that those families thoroughly understand the world situation. So on so Bloomberg ran a story on June 3rd, that's the day before yesterday. Risks to the world economy are, quote, glaring and global, with growth likely to suffer as governments withdraw physical and monetary support, according to Jacob Rothschild, chairman of RIT Capital Partners, PLC. The U.S. economic recovery is fragile. God, I love the way they play with these words. European Monetary Union in doubt. It's dead. And Japan is facing a, quote, monumental challenge following the earthquake. Rothschild said in a statement to shareholders today, inflation is threatening growth in emerging economies, he said. The risks ahead are glaring and global, the 75-year-old British financier said in the statement. It is likely that the withdrawal of the physical and monetary stimuli, which will surely come soon, will have an impact on global growth. Indeed, there is already evidence of some slowing down. No kidding. Well, when a Rothschild says something like that, again, you know, this is the place where I've been through all the years that I've been writing about this, is when you see the biggest names, the biggest entities finally admitting to a problem, you know that it's several times worse already. But I thought that was interesting because we have just come through five straight weeks of losses on the Dow, which is fine with me. But it is a clear sign that there is nothing that can hide the fact that globally, and we'll take a little tour around the world in our stories here to see how all these things are playing together. Unrest in the Middle East, North Africa is just ablaze. The Yemeni president was wounded in an attack. He has fled to Saudi Arabia. In Syria, the riots and protests are continuing as they are all throughout the region. You know, the friction between Iran and Saudi Arabia, the Shia and the Sunni sects of Islam, is playing a much deeper role through the oil fields right now, and that's a power play. That's I don't know how that's going to end. It's just a continued instability. But nothing is returning to normal in the Middle East, in North Africa. June 4 yesterday, according to Reuters, Barack Obama, in addition to dealing with all the other stuff that he's doing, God, he's just a showman. He's not doing anything at all. President Barack Obama is pointing to problems in Japan and Europe as challenges for the U.S. economy, placing some blame on events abroad for a domestic recovery that is showing signs of slowing down. Like, we all know it's dead. They just, okay, it's slowing down. Government data released on Friday showed employers in May hired the fewest number of workers in 8 months, and the U.S. unemployment rose to 9.1. Well, we know that's been a lie forever, up from 9%. It actually was, you know, we lost about another 440-some thousand jobs last week. And the employment numbers are getting worse everywhere. We do have, there's a lot of follow-on, and we'll touch on that in a couple of stories, in global supply chains. But now not only out of Japan because of Fukushima, but also out of China, and we'll come to that in a few minutes, which means that this overly complex global system that we have is going to break down exponentially the same way it grew. It's going to get faster, quicker, and those are the signs we're seeing. A lot of attention's been drawn to the E. coli infections moving around Europe, especially with Germany just had 200 new cases. I've been asked a couple times whether I thought this was biowarfare, economic warfare. I don't know. But to me, it sounds more symptomatically like a planet is in great distress, and we can expect more of these. Sometimes understanding where the E. coli came from is not as important as dealing with it. But I noticed an interesting spin on one of the stories talking about E. coli. This is from The Guardian. And The Guardian was painting out like it was organic food that was responsible for the E. coli. Oh, my God. That's driving people back into a global industrialized, centralized food system that is already breaking down and dead. And here we are at those. All we can do now is be sorry for people who choose to believe that that organic is not good for you, and that you need to go to a supermarket to get what you want. But Europe is, as we all know, the European Union is essentially a dead man walking right now. Greece coming up for a second bailout. I just saw some numbers. I think it was like 120 billion euros, more printed money, which means nothing. And the Greeks will, we've had stories on the World News Desk at CollapseNet this week saying that clearly the Greeks will not accept another layer, much more draconian, of budget cuts. They can't carry any more weight, and they can't be punished anymore. So I'm suspecting that Greece will not get the bailout, and Greece will go insolvent, which would be the roughly globally the effect that Lehman Brothers had when it went down in 08, but much bigger. But it will have a Lehman Brothers kind of immediate ripple effect throughout. Massive protests are now continuing throughout Greece, and riots and Spain. We've had some amazing videos from protests in Spain, which is now going under. And so the dominoes are falling. Germany's willingness to bail out all of Europe is and its patience is running thin. And there's no way out for the European Union. So before we went into the show, and I was talking to Gary Null tonight, he asked to talk about, you know, the currencies. And the problem is, at this point, everything is so unstable that you may have a situation on Monday where the U.S. dollar, which is weakening dramatically fast, which will accelerate flight from the dollar the faster it weakens. And so the euro is momentarily stable, and you have the yuan, the Chinese yuan, emerging. The problem is that the whole situation of one currency relative to another in terms of stability or profitability, these can all change overnight now, with the kind of instability. And so, you know, playing a currency market now is a very risky business if you're in Forex or the carry trade, as it's called, and you're arbitraging currencies. You would have to be a genius right now because nobody can predict which fiat currencies are going to go down in what order in relation to the rest. Do not think that the Canadian dollar is a safe haven. We all, as we've and many others have tracked, Canada is has survived a lot of the effects of the 2008 crash because of tar sands and because their housing bubble had not burst yet. Well, there's signs its housing bubble is ready to go. But Canada is deeply leveraged in debt with everything else, and I am all for keeping physical assets now. I'm for moving out of fiat currencies by any means possible. You know, I have to keep a cash stash here at the house. We all should. But here's where you go to the precious metals, or here's where you go to the essential supplies that we're all going to be needing shortly. That's probably the best place to put your wealth these days. Another interesting story that came up this week, which we have confirmed from the Observer in London. Scientists create genetically modified corn which prevents human conception. September, this was, that was from back in 2001. Now, why this is coming up again now, I don't know, except for the story kind of indicates that this corn is going to find its way into mainstream supermarkets. And we did confirm, this week that that it is possible to do this, and it has been done. It's not a very difficult process for a molecular biologist to do that kind of engineering. So all the more reason to know where your food comes from, to grow it yourself, and to have chain of custody on it. One of the stories this week that that really caught my attention, because it's becoming clear to me that this is probably what all of us now can begin to see a lot of, and we'll see much more of in the weeks and months ahead. And certainly if there's a major economic crash, I think the social things holding it back, the social constraints holding it back will be released. 2 days ago, yesterday, a CSX train in Massachusetts derailed because thieves had stolen 2 8-foot sections of the railroad track for scrap metal. Now, trains are very expensive, and that you know, a derailment like that causes unbelievable chaos. But as you follow this up with what we've been seeing around the world, thieves stripping copper wires out of streetlights in Los Angeles, out of telephone lines all over the country, that kind of scavenging and looting, I think, is going to be one of the dominant things in our future, dominant threats that we have to deal with very soon. And I think that just as soon as the wheels come off in July, we're going to see a lot more of that, which is going to destabilize things even further. U.S. house prices fall, beats Great Depression slide. That's from The Independent in Britain. I have to read you this. This is just to put us in context of where we are economically and kind of to remind us of all the things that are happening at once. The ailing U.S. housing market passed a grim milestone in the first quarter of this year, posting a further deterioration that means that the fall in house prices is now greater than that suffered during the Great Depression. The brief recovery in prices in 2009, spurred by government aid to first-time buyers, has now been completely snuffed out. And the average American home now costs 33% less than it did at the peak of the housing bubble in 2007. The peak-to-trough fall in house prices in the 1930s depression was 31%, and prices took 19 years to recover after that downturn. Well, and of course they also recovered at that time because we had, as M. King Hubbert himself pointed out, we had infinite resources, we had cheap, readily abundant oil, we had, you know, everything was in place, but we are lacking in the energy and the resources now. So a lot of people are going to ride their houses down, and we've seen some stories this week, too, about debtors' prisons and how people that fall behind are getting pretty seriously harassed. So I got some questions coming in. We're going to come in take a couple now. The number to call, 1-888-874-4888, or email me direct at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com, and that's where I'm going now to a question from Chuck. Hi, Mike. I'm not sure when the U.S. economic system will fail, but I'm pretty certain that it will at some point in the near future. Yes, as are we are all. I'm researching ways to convert my U.S. dollars into something that will have value after the collapse. Is silver better than gold because of its low value compared to gold? Silver may double or triple in price, where gold may be close to being at its maximum value. What about other natural resources like clean water? That could be a valuable commodity in the future. Please give your thoughts on how to de-zombie, we like de-zombie, my money. We know that, and we've been watching the precious metals markets. Gold is doing very well. Gold has not reached anywhere near where it's going to be someday, soon, you know, within the next year or two. Both precious metals are going to continue to rise. I remain, you know, long-term, very confident about that. You need a balance for liquidity. But all the signs now are really kind of indicating that this hyperinflation that has been talked about for a long time is just around the corner, and that's really the way it looks. Sell-offs of dollar holdings by China and other countries continue at a pretty solid pace. Not quite enough to trigger a panic, but I think that many, many countries are dumping as fast as they can. So what we know is that fiat currencies are going to fail. Precious metals are good. I would mix, because you would use an ounce of gold, which may be worth $2,000 here, very soon, or well over 1500 now. For bigger purchases, you can't make change. Silver will allow you to make, smaller purchases for smaller denominations. Both are excellent hedges, but we've seen real stiff efforts all week to hammer silver. Silver was posed to break out, and it was revealed that COMEX in Chicago, the commodities exchange, only had enough physical silver on hand to satisfy, I think it was about 5,000 contracts for silver. And a contract is a contract to deliver I think it's 100 ounces, might be more, of silver. But, you know, these fixed contracts. But the problem is COMEX can only cover 5,000, and they must have 200,000 to 300,000 contracts out there. So there were some serious efforts to suppress the silver price this year so that people didn't start getting called on the margins and people started demanding physical delivery. Now, what we know about both the gold and the silver market is that the physical gold and the physical silver have been leveraged on paper, just like fractional reserve banking. A bank takes in a dollar, it lends nine based upon that $1 on the assumption there won't be a run. With the physical metals, GATA, again, I'll point to some work they did earlier last year, showing that that gold is has a leverage ratio of about 42 to 1. It's unknown what it is for silver, but the point is clear is that we're getting closer to the showdown moments when people are going to have to produce the physical product, and that's when we will see unbelievable breakouts in both metals. I would mix them up. When you ask about water, no, I wouldn't invest in water because water is heavy. I'm sorry, it's just you can't carry it around. You must store your own water, but it's not something I would invest in as a commodity. Because it's just too much to manage. Again, I think now where we all are, CollapseNet and those of us who I've been talking to this last week, there's a whole new attitude among all of us right now. It's like, okay, all we're doing now is we're waiting for the obvious stuff to start happening in the next 2 to 3 weeks. And we all took the attitude this week that we would have a good weekend and catch our breath and take some time and spend some time with families, because at CollapseNet, the way we see things and the way a lot of people do now is this might be one of the last windows of opportunity that we have to catch our breath, to get a little R&R before things really get squirrely. Let's go back. We have another question. Then we're going to come up to a break. We'll come back to a new white trash song, get to more of your questions, and I can run you through some more of these stories. Oh, my God. Oh, now I have four new questions. Okay. Comment of the San Francisco story. This is from Rick Dawson to Michael. Hi, Mike, CollapseNet member. Thanks for the work you all do. Read the San Francisco situation. At whatever point we stop being human and caring about one another, regardless of the paycheck, it is at that point we slide that much faster toward collapse. The regulations may change, but the woman who jumped in an attempt to save this guy did the right thing regardless of the rules. Sorry, all the firefighters felt constrained by the rules. Yeah, Rick, you make a valid point. Of course, we don't want to become hardened, but then we also have to realize that we can't save everybody and everything. So prioritization will be essential. I go back to that thing from the depressurized cabin. You know, put your own oxygen mask on first. And an individual jumping in to help, I think any one of us would do that. But we're seeing cutbacks in services all over. I guess another parallel to this would be that police departments, so in another set of thread we covered on CollapseNet this week, are getting inundated with criminal complaints arising from bad debts, and they can't crush crime, and yet these hugely aggressive debt collectors are going out. So choices have to be made, and I really think, and the situation with San Francisco, as I recall, was that the fire department couldn't go in because of insurance prohibitions and training and certification. Their workman's comp, their liability insurance, didn't cover it, and they had to stop. I think, although it's sad that the individual involved died, I do think that was a good thing, that those kinds of decisions are being made, because people do need to start to understand that what we all assumed was going to be there may not be there for us. Now it's now 6:29. All right, we're going to roll up on a station break. We're going to come back with a new white trash song, and I've got now 4, 5, 6 questions. Thanks, guys. We've got a lot to talk about tonight. It is now half past the hour. We're going to do a station break. I'll be back in just a few. Yeah.
all the credit now you're using as target practice. You're so attractive.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Dr. Vicki, I'm so excited to be on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I'll be able to talk to you live, answer your questions, and work with you for your own patient rights. Tune in every Sunday at 5 p.m. ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. See you on Sunday, 5 p.m.
Hi, I'm Eric Davis, host of Expanding Mind. Join me and co-host Maja Daou each week as we explore the culture of consciousness, spirituality, neuroscience, media tech, and all manner of wonders and esoterica. Expanding Mind streams every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Keep your mind open.
Join us, Bruce and Marianne Curtis, Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network for Truth and Freedom. We present provocative conversations with the world's most brilliant minds in the areas of holistic health, spiritual wisdom, politics, and a host of other topics. Some of our topics include the latest work in non-invasive therapy on the brain, the truth beneath the global economic meltdown, healing power of the breath, and the sublime truth beyond all religious traditions. In this age of transformation, we need to look beneath the surface appearance of things to see the underlying reality. For material that is always illuminating and often liberating, tune in to Truth and Freedom on the Progressive Radio Network Fridays at 3 p.m.
You are listening to Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour. That was our song, Say a Prayer for the New White Trash. We're going to do Avalanche and Earthquake tonight. That's a real appropriate song for tonight in a couple of minutes. We got a question from Pablo Panero to the Lifeboat Hour. Mike, hello from Santiago de Chile. Mucho gusto. Well, bienvenido to our show. What do you think about the news of a probable 213 barrels reserve of oil beneath the South China Sea? Does this change peak oil? Thanks for being there. Okay, here's where we go back to that simple arithmetic, and the world is not consuming 88 million barrels a day. That's 68 million of that is conventional oil. The balance, 64 million barrels, and the balance of that is coming from tar sands, natural gas, liquids, and ethanol. 213 billion barrels of reserve oil is a less than 2.5 day supply for the planet. Contrast that with IEA's chief economist Fadi Barol's recent statement that we need to find four new Saudi Arabias just to offset decline. And it was only three when Matt Simmons started making that comparison in about 2005. So the global decline rate is accelerating. So that's problem number one. And problem number two, as I have documented so many times over the years in so many articles and in my most recent book, Confronting Collapse, they announced 213 billion barrels. And what you get 5-6 months, a year later, is, oh, gee, we wildly overstated how much oil was there. We saw that in the Carioca fields of finds off of Brazil in deep water. That's just a routine thing that, you know, we had a thing on the World News Desk this week that Kazakhstan is moving to suspend oil exports. Now, if you were to roll the clock back to 2001 around 9/11, the headline stories were 300 billion barrels of oil in the Caspian Basin, and Kazakhstan was going to solve the internet, and there was a ton of corruption involving Dick Cheney, who was a member of the Kazakh Oil Advisory Board, and all the things that happened. But now Kazakhstan, and their oil is very heavy sour. Kazakhstan, turns out, doesn't have enough even to take care of its own people. So we're dealing with cooked books everywhere. So, Pablo, none of us, anybody who is putting any hope in any official statement now or even giving it any credibility is kind of setting them up, setting themselves up for a big disappointment. And that's obvious to most of us, and I hope that's clear for you. Even if there is 200 plus billion barrels there, it's only a 2.5 day supply for the world, and it's not in the glass. You got to invest to get it. It's hard to find. We plucked the low hanging fruit, and no, it's not going to make a damn bit of difference. We've got a question now from Edgar Shepard. Hi, Edgar. Mike, I am a grateful CollapseNet member and been learning from your guidance since crossing the Rubicon. Thank you. In the past year, my wife and I have obtained solar panels, installed a rainwater collection system, excellent, growing 10 crops as well, and joined a transition town, wonderful. Caroline Staten, the National Executive Director of Transition US, was here for a housewarming at my house last night. They're still doing great work in northwest New Jersey. This is where Edgar is. My question, is it possible to take video of your upcoming event on Thursday 6-9 with Nicole Foss and make available for donation, purchase, etc.? Our group here in New Jersey is 21 people strong, of which only two others are CollapseNet members. I would like to use as a tool to grow our numbers and familiarize local members with you and the CollapseNet service in general. Well, first of all, yes, Nicole Foss will be speaking here in Sebastopol next Thursday. I'll be there, of course. She's been a guest on the show twice, but it's not my event. I'm not sponsoring the event. So CollapseNet won't have the right to the video, but I would suggest that you go to Automatic Earth and make queries there, and we will see what I can find out about that, and I'll report back to you on the show next week. Okay, we got some more questions coming in, but now I think it's time for our little musical interlude here. And again, given the attitude that we have, and I'm sensing now is pretty widely held everywhere. Everybody just says, okay, it's here, it's coming, and let's take some time to do something fun. And that was the whole intent I had when I wrote a song called Avalanche and Earthquake with the band New White Trash. My great friend Doug Lewis and Andy Kravitz was with us on that. And it was all about living on a windowsill between, like, where we are now, seeing all of the inertia of collapse building up to the point where we can see that that a catastrophic systemic failure is underway around the planet. But we have this moment to breathe today, to play, to love, and to share time with each other, and that's what the song Avalanche and Earthquake is all about. Here we go. Time to breathe today. That was Avalanche Earthquake from New White Trash from our CD Double Wide. And you can find and listen to all 37 original songs at www.newwhitetrash.com. You can listen for free. You can download for $11.11. You can get a beautiful handcrafted, hand-packaged CD for, I think, $22. And we appreciate all the support we've been getting with that. And I should let you guys know we're going to have a new song. Not a new White Trash song. Hope to have this up on the show next week. I recorded on my last day in Venice, kind of saying goodbye to the hood, a song called Venice Boardwalk Blues. It's a classic, you know, in a 12-bar blues style that that I sang like Jim Morrison right on the beat and with some really great musicians. Karma Auger and his band The Oblivion Express did the music for us. Recorded it there, and I just got it, and I'm real pleased with that. So we'll have a new blues song for us next week. Is it Will Broom? It looks, it says W-I-I, capital I. So why Broom? I don't know. Maybe it's Will. To the Lifeboat Hour. Mike, whenever you talk about Rags, your dog, I really feel you. I have a cat named Amber that I love like a daughter. I hear a lot about human suffering and what it will look like for people once collapse gets worse, but I don't hear much about the animals. I fear that they're going to take the brunt of all this. What are your thoughts on that? Well, certainly a lot of domesticated pets. We're documenting that right after 2008. You know, one of the first things that went when people were dumping out of their houses and all of the junk that they'd, you know, leveraged to buy, the pets were suffering as well. Animals were being abandoned. And that's going to continue, but, you know, I'm not, overall as a species, I'm not worried about dogs. I just saw something not too long ago. It was on National Geographic, probably, that the second most successful species in the history of the planet, after human beings, is dogs. And that's because of their partnership with human beings. But dogs instinctively have much better survival skills than humans do. I think dogs are much better equipped to survive. A lot are going to suffer, but really what I'm thinking is in major cities, we're going to see dog packs forming. And way back when I was a cop in the 70s, after the oil embargoes and we had some economic troubles there in the 70s in South Central Los Angeles, it was not uncommon to see large packs of dogs that could be very aggressive. And as more dogs are abandoned, dogs are pack animals, and I think we're going to see in large cities packs of dogs posing a danger to people and certainly food and with disease and everything else. That's just something, again, I think Gary said it as well, Gary Null said it, is that, you know, if you can, it's time to get out of a city if you can. Because the cities are just going to be taking everything on the chin. But the species of dogs will survive. Nobody's going to like to witness any suffering, but I think what we all need to get clearly lodged in our minds and start to accept in our guts is the fact that we are going to have to witness a lot of suffering about which we can do very little. And that's going to be a wake-up for a lot of people. We have a question from Justin D'Armand to the Lifeboat Hour. Hi, Mike. CollapseNet member here. And I want to thank everybody. We're in 63 countries now. We're just ticking up on 4,800 members. Our stuff is still expanding. We have a new supervising editor at CollapseNet, John Barnes, who's been doing a great job with us. We're going to be producing more stories, more useful to you. So Justin writes, I know that the coming collapse is going to be like nothing that we have ever experienced. Yes, that's correct. How would you judge the severity of it compared to the crash of 08? What I mean is that crash didn't impact me here in the middle of Kansas as much as, say, Wall Street or a retiree. Will it really change America, or will we limp along as we have for the last few decades? Also, Mike, I feel legalization and utilization of the hemp and cannabis plant for medicine and manufacturing, I know it won't replace oil, can help us muddle through collapse. If it is a spiritual revolution as well, I can think of no other perfect companion than cannabis for the human race. Your thoughts? Sorry for rambling. I'm high. That's okay. But my back don't hurt. Ha, take it easy. All right. Well, first of all, Justin, yeah, the events now that are following a scenario very similar to the events that built up in the first half of 2008 is coming, and it will be worse than 2008. looking back at what has been done around the world with the bailout approach, the printing money, creating debt, and expecting to grow out of that, only bought us this window of time from 2008 to now. When the next one hits, it will be more severe. And again, I am firmly in the camp that we will see it no later than the end of July. I'm absolutely convinced the earnings reports are confirming that around the world. Stocks have lost for five straight weeks. Everything is, you know, we're seeing headline stories on mainstream media using terms like panic, total collapse, failure, that we didn't usually see. So this is going to be worse, and there will be no buying time after this. That's the point that I've made so clearly in the documentary Collapse, Chris Smith's film, that this is going off the cliff now. Peak oil is ravaging the world. Oil prices are going up. We're having increasing frequency of major blackouts worldwide. In major cities, Australia's being hit very hard. The whole power grid in Belize went down this week, a whole national power grid. And we see the thefts of even the infrastructure stuff. And see, all this stuff now is cascading. It's going to feed on itself. There's a comment I'm coming to that was given to me by a Susie Gruber who moderates and has organized the free Lighthouse directory at CollapseNet. Now, well, more than 1,400 hand-picked entries. Again, just about any subject you can think of that's relevant to your preparations and your lifeboat building is in there, and it's categorized. And, well, her comment is that if it was exponential growth on the way up, it'll be exponential collapse on the way down. In other words, increasing in speed, severity, symptoms, manifestations. And so, no, this is worse than 2008, and it's going to have a completely different outcome than what little results were achieved as a result of the bailouts in 2008 and the printing of all that debt. Here's some interesting stories, and this has to do with complexity. Now, looking at this picture I have above my desk of Commander Dick Marcinko, founder of SEAL Team 6, I'm going to read you what Dick has on his picture that he autographed to me. He says, "Keep it simple, stupid. Many of today's managers are in love with complicated systems. They think that if their systems are complex, then they must be real smart sons of bitches to be able to run them. Of course, if they think this, then they're actually dumb sons of bitches. The more complex a system is, the more likely it is to fail." So contrast this with this story that we picked up on the World News Desk, and I made it a breaking news story on the homepage at CollapseNet. This is from Bernama, which is the official news agency of Malaysia, a pretty industrialized, sophisticated country. And the headline for the story said, "China's power shortage to affect global electronics supply chain." As a result of these, very, very massive power shortages all throughout China, which is crippling now their industrial capacity, that led me to observe, here's what I wrote on CollapseNet. "It should now be coming clear that collapse can and will happen exponentially faster as overcomplexity shoots reverberations through the already cracking superstructure of industrial civilization. I give credit to a dear friend who said to me, exponential growth on the way up, exponential collapse on the way down." That was brilliant. Now tell me, with the two largest national manufacturers and suppliers of irreplaceable electronics components going down, now China is Renesas, I think is the name of the company, and everybody needs those components, and it was like Gary talking about the transformers are now only made in China, and it's a three-year wait. So the supply chain is stressed. We're already seeing devastating impacts of the loss from much of the microcircuitry that was coming out of Japan, which is irreplaceable because there's nobody else making them now, certainly not for those prices, and you can't gear up. Now it's China as well. And if you consider that China and Japan are like, it's the heart and lungs of the global electronic system, whether it's consumer electronics or, as I pointed out in my comments, I said, what happens when it's circuitry for computers that control traffic lights in big cities? I've heard some stories of things like that, what do we do? What about commercial airliners? circuits that are needed to regulate air traffic. What happens if it's a transformer that's needed to keep lights on in New York City, a transformer that's only made in Japan or China, and took 6 months to build and ship on a three-year waiting list before Fukushima? Going back to the basics of human industrial civilization, electricity and power are essential. Without electricity, you cannot have any kind of GDP growth because you can't make anything or sell anything. But now, with these cracks showing this way, it's clear that the global economy is a fungible and that we are all connected, and the stuff that's happening in Japan and China is going to bring all of us down, and I'm standing by that observation that I've been making since Fukushima happened. And it really looks to me, and especially with the weather crises now, which are getting worse and more pronounced. We had a tornado in Massachusetts. I mean, Mother Earth is just in convulsions, and she's redecorating and rearranging herself. And all we can do is deal with it. From the Wall Street Journal, this is more on the supply chain stuff, June 2nd, tumult in tech supply chain may be long-lasting. The Asian technology supply chain has long provided proved resilient, having rebounded from a devastating earthquake in Taiwan in 99 and the outbreak of SARS in 03. But Acer corporate president Jim Wong said he is concerned that the March earthquake and tsunami in Japan may have longer-lasting effects. Yes, of course, that's what we're seeing, and that's what we were all over at CollapseNet well more than a month ago. And this is just confirmation that's coming. From Reuters on June 2nd, Japan's hit to the global supply chain is not the only culprit behind the remarkably synchronized worldwide economic slowdown, casting doubt on predictions of a rapid rebound. I mean, people aren't even, they haven't given up lying yet, but they're lying less. I think one of the most important things that I saw this week, and I didn't put this on the homepage as a must-see video at CollapseNet, Chris Martinson, who has also been a guest on this show twice, did a great scientific interview with Arnie Gunderson of Fair Winds. The part one of that is available to listen to at Chris Martinson's site, chrismartinson.com, and it's a long, detailed, thorough scientific briefing that if you're there is very comprehensive. And Gunderson is always this consummate professional, and my take on listening to the whole long interview part one was that, oh my God, there are so many complex insoluble issues at Fukushima right now that there is really no clear path out, and we still are at a place. But let me just, the most important thing Arnie said in his interview with Chris Martin that I heard was he said, if there is a serious aftershock, which is still, of course, extraordinarily likely, Building 4, Reactor 4, is tilting and ready to fall down, And that means that all of the 20 years of spent fuel rods would just be out laying on the ground. And let me paraphrase what Arnie Gunderson, the consummate scientist, said. He said, that's unexplored scientific territory. So if there is an aftershock and Building 4 falls down, if you are anywhere near that part, get out. And that's as clear as he said it. But what's clear is that I see a parallel between Fukushima and Deepwater Horizon now, which is that we're hiding everything in the water. With Deepwater Horizon, they used the Corexit to hide the oil and sink it, and of course that didn't solve any problems. It just poisoned the food chain. It just put it out of sight for a while. And with Fukushima, most of the radiation now is being controlled just by using tens of thousands of tons of water, which is being dumped back into groundwater or into the ocean, and the problem isn't solved, but that seems to be the extent of our ability to the Japanese government's petroleum man's ability to deal with the problem. Coming down to another question, I want to thank you all for your questions tonight. We are going to have some other guests, some good guests coming up, but probably later in the month. We're going to stay on top of this. This is from Donnie. Hold on a second. Let me open this. This is from Donnie Harris. Brother man, thank you. Looks like the quarterly earnings reports are going to dovetail nicely with the end of QE2. Well, thanks. I want to cover that before we close out of the show tonight. How long do you think it will take to announce QE3? And I think the Fed's in a real pickle when they pull QE2. They eliminate the meager growth we've been seeing. If they bring it back, they could provoke a panic flight from the dollar. Do you think after the end of QE2 we'll see a correction in silver, or should one go ahead and buy with both hands? Roasting in an East Tennessee heat wave. Well, Donnie, thank you for mentioning QE2. Quantitative easing 2, which we covered a collapse that and told you exactly how that was going to play starting last summer and fall, officially ends in June. And quantitative easing 2 is the only thing that has allowed for any kind of paper showing of recovery or success. That was simply because the Fed turned on the printing presses. And of course triggered global inflation. But QE2 ends, and where the markets are and the government are is that the Fed can't do QE3, which they're going to have to do, unless there's a dramatic fall in asset prices in stocks, bonds, and all the indexes and so on and so forth, which they'll use as a justification. Well, I think that's going to happen very immediately. We know the Dow has been going down for 5 straight weeks. It took some big hits last week, well-deserved. And when QE2 is out, all the artificial support goes, so we'll see more dramatic losses in the market, aside from those that were already coming from the earning reports as a result of Fukushima, peak oil, and oil. So, yeah, okay, QE3, I think they're going to have to announce it pretty quickly. Where I have reservations is whether QE3 is going to make a damn bit of difference or not. We are at the point now where it's becoming so clear that money is not energy. And the more money that's printed now has less and less value because there's no energy to back it up and make it work. And so, you know, this whole little circuitous chain is breaking now. That's the significance of this next significant downleg that's coming. The really sharp one that's going to see a lot of shutdowns and a lot of dislocation is that there's no more bailouts that can be done. So whatever had worked up to that point, if to the degree that it worked, is not going to be available even as an option. And I'm not sure about silver is being hammered. People are really trying to suppress the price of silver. I'm still long-term very bullish on it all right now. I would be buying silver and gold with both hands if I had money to do that. And I would be holding on to it after I had taken care of my personal safety needs for essential supplies to be ready where I am, and that's what we're doing here. So anyway, okay, I got a couple more questions. We still didn't get through it. This has been a good show. Thank you for all. I'll be back to you next week, and I'll be attending Harmony Festival up here in one of the most exciting places in the world where people really get what's going on. And I'll bring you some news from that. I'm going to see Nicole Foss this week, and I'll be back to you on the Lifeboat Hour a week from tonight. Have a good week. Take it easy. Don't forget to play. Good night.